Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also co-author of Heavy Lifting, along with Cam Edwards. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good martini, bad martini, and a champagne toast today. But before we get started, Jim, as you mentioned in today's Morning Jolt, happy 60th birthday to National Review. Almost ready for all those federal entitlements, Medicare and Social Security and everything else.
Yeah, we've always believed in the power of the private sector. And, of course, private charity, since we have National Review Institute, which is the intentional nonprofit wing, and the magazine, which is the accidental nonprofit wing.
Very good. All right, well, on to the good martini now. And this martini might sound eerily reminiscent of Thursday's good martini, and that's that, as of right now, Paul Ryan is setting a good tone as the new Speaker of the House. We'll see how his strategy unfolds here in the coming weeks as we get close to another funding deadline and obviously the specifics on policy proposals. But he did this weekend what's known as the full Ginsburg. He appeared on every Sunday morning talk show. I think he recorded all of them actually late last week. But he talked about a number of important things. This one, I believe, was with Martha Raddatz of ABC's This Week, where he talked about the need for conservatives and Republicans to have a specific, optimistic, positive agenda and not just reacting to what Obama's trying to do.
We have to show people what our alternatives are, and that is the kind of leadership that I think people are hungering for here.
And John Boehner didn't do that?
No, our party hasn't done that. It's not just John Boehner's fault. Our party has not been a successful proposition party. We cannot run on vague platitudes. And that's why I believe we as Republicans must offer people of this nation a better way forward and a very specific and bold agenda. And that is what our members are going to unify around.
And one of the issues getting a lot of attention today is Raddatz pointing out a promise that Ryan made to the House Freedom Caucus that Ryan is only too happy to keep.
The National Review reported this week that you made a promise to the House Freedom Caucus that you will not bring immigration reform legislation to the House floor while President Obama is in office.
Yeah, I think he's proven untrustworthy on this issue. He tried to go around Congress with an executive order to rewrite laws unilaterally. Presidents don't write laws. Congress writes laws. So, yes, I do not believe we should and we won't bring immigration legislation with a president we cannot trust on this issue. If we believe and have consensus on things like border enforcement and interior security, then that's fine.
So some specifics still to come, but you have to like what you're hearing as a conservative, Jim.
I point out that his promise to the Freedom Caucus, that's just common sense. Because really, if you're Paul Ryan, why would you bring up probably the issue that divides your party more vociferously and angrily and intensely than any other issue out there? This is probably a good indication that Paul Ryan has the potential to be a very good leader of Republicans in the House, and also that he's not suicidal or does not wish to drive his party into the ditch early in his tenure. Now, some folks who are wary about this might worry about, you know, Ryan introducing similar legislation with a different president. But, you know, I guess we got to cross that bridge when we come to it. In terms of tone, style, and I think just his general observation that, yeah, we have been lacking a positive agenda from Republicans. We know we're not going to get it enacted under this president, but the whole point is kind of to set the stage for January 2017, where a Republican president and, you know, Republican Congress, Republican House, Republican Senate can turn into a factory for conservative ideas and get them enacted and get the country on the right track.
Speaker Ryan also sat down with Dana Bash of CNN, and the issue of federal funding for Planned Parenthood came up. Ryan said he didn't think that Planned Parenthood deserved a red cent. He said he couldn't really promise whether or not Republicans would be able to remove funding the next time it comes up here next month. He said regular order is going to prevail, and that could mean an amendment to the bill trying to strip out taxpayer funds for Planned Parenthood. But ultimately, he says he understands how tough it is to get things even up for a vote in the Senate, much less past a presidential veto. So he's not promising anything, but he says he's definitely planning to make the moral case for it, not to mention the fact that a special committee has been set up. For a lot of conservatives, this is a clear line in the sand. It's essentially taxpayer funding of murder, and it has to stop. And hopefully we can get there, but at least he's promising to make the moral argument on this issue when for the past couple of years we've been very, very frustrated with Republican leaders who say, well, we don't have the votes to override a veto, so why bother even bringing it up?
Yeah, and also, like, isn't it kind of refreshing to hear a House Speaker reminding us the Constitution exists?
Right.
I mean, look, there are a lot of things that have gone wrong in Obama's presidency, but I think, you know, deep in the hearts and the backs of the minds of conservatives, this is what, you know, kind of nags them and is most fearing the idea we might be in a post-constitutionalist society, that it's just an old dusty document sitting there in the National Archives instead of being the actual game plan of how our government is supposed to work.
Yeah. So Paul Ryan's got a better appreciation for the Constitution than the richest man in the world, or at least one of the richest men in the world, as we shift to martini number two. Bill Gates, co-founder of Microsoft, of course. He's now largely not involved with that day to day. He's doing his philanthropy, and now he's looking to win the fight against climate change. He did a long interview with The Atlantic, and here's some of the comments making news today. He basically, if you look at the Drudge link, says only socialism can defeat climate change. Specifically on why the free market won't develop new forms of energy fast enough, he says, quote, "Well, there's no fortune to be made. Even if you have a new energy source that costs the same as today's and emits no CO2, it will be uncertain compared with what's tried and true and already operating at unbelievable scale and has gotten through all the regulatory problems. Like, okay, what do you do with coal ash? And how do you guarantee something is safe? Without a substantial carbon tax, there is no incentive for innovators or plant buyers to switch." And so he goes on to talk about research and development money and all this other stuff. But for a guy who really did quite well in the capitalist system, Jim, he doesn't seem too excited about it anymore.
Quite well. I mean, basically, the free market has created more wealth for Bill Gates than anyone else in history, right? So it's very hard to buy, oh, he got a raw deal. Hasn't been good for him, you know. Secondly, for all of his talk about, oh, I want to stop climate change and all that stuff, I notice this guy has not given up his giant $40 million private jet that he uses to fly all around the world and can carry 19 people, right? So once again, it's sacrifices for thee, not for me. And then thirdly, I mean, Greg, when you hear an enormously wealthy guy who's got access to all kinds of technology start griping about how democracy is an impediment to his policy goals, you hear a little bit of, no, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. Just kind of get that kind of vague. You feel like you should have in the Pacific Northwest this giant mountain lair, you know, on top of a volcano, maybe sharks with lasers on their heads or something like that, you know. No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to stop emitting carbon dioxide.
Oh, my goodness. Well, on to what's normally the third martini now, but a champagne toast. As many conservatives probably already know, former Tennessee Senator Fred Thompson passed away on Sunday at the age of 73 following a recurrence of lymphoma that popped up last decade, actually prior to his 2008 presidential campaign. He won a seat once held by Al Gore in the 94 landslide, won re-election in 1996, ultimately decided not to run for re-election. Way back when, he was the minority counsel in the Watergate hearings and quite possibly the last counsel at a major hearing to actually care what the truth was rather than figuring out what was best for the party at the time. And then, of course, he was also a very accomplished actor. I just happened to be watching Secretariat prior to even hearing the news yesterday. He'd had a good run on Law and Order prior to his presidential run. And Jim, for those who know us well, they're going to realize that our favorite performance is him as Trudeau, the air traffic controller in Die Hard 2. Here's a quick clip of that.
Attention all controllers, attention. We have a code red alert. Everyone already on approach or inside our pattern holds at the outer markers. Stack them and rack.
Fred Thompson had two children from his first marriage and two very young children from his second marriage. His wife, Jerry, survives him. And Jim, just someone who was widely respected by just about everyone here in Washington.
Yeah, it was. You hear his passing and all over Twitter last night, there are people who – the enormous amount of just affection for this man. We all kind of remember the ill-fated 2008 presidential campaign. And one of the obvious, you know, the observation was that Fred Thompson was not a man who suffered fools gladly and who really didn't want to put up with a lot of the rigmarole and kind of silliness that comes with running for president. One of the Iowa debates where I think they said, you know, like there was like climate change, yay or nay, and they wanted a show of hands. And he just said, no hand shows. I'm not doing any hand shows today. And he observed that like this is, these were, you know, ironically, we're having these debates, these, you know, arguments about debates today that that was an early indicator that very complicated issues were going to try to be, you know, hyper simplified into, you know, hands up or hands down. And Fred Thompson basically just said, you know what, I'm not dealing with this. His campaign did not go particularly well. You know, people talk about, did he have the fire in the belly and the hunger and all that stuff? You heard through the grapevine that Fred Thompson was a man who was extremely happy with his life after he left the Senate in, you know, during the Bush administration, who didn't need the presidency, wasn't craving it. His aspiration was to be the next Paul Harvey, not to be the next FDR or anything like that. And As somebody pointed out yesterday, it seemed like that was probably one of the great reasons he might have been a really good president, is that he seemed like a guy who understood the job and wasn't doing it to fulfill some deep-rooted need in himself. Just two observations I'll be able to share, because he went on a couple of National Review cruises, got to interact with him a little bit. One being that he was on a panel that I did, Greg, and also had Tony Blankley, by the way, late, so we're losing too many of our great ones. Alternatively, the lesson is don't do a panel moderated by me. We're there. I get to talk about his career, all the kind of stuff. And finally, you know, I get to say to D.A. Arthur Branch, because, you know, he's sitting there right in front of me, Mr. Thompson, is it because I'm a lesbian? Both listeners who saw that episode will ask. That was one of his last appearances of Elizabeth Rome. And the other thing I just kind of was an observation about him, just this is after the 2008 campaign. He's largely retired from politics, doing a little bit of voiceover work and things like that, but not really interested in running for office anymore. And on these, you know, National Review crews, we have these panel discussions and experts and political thinkers and authors and all the guys talking about different topics. And he used to sit in the back and take notes. And this was a guy who was just into these topics and cared about these topics and wanted to know more about these topics. And so I always thought it was interesting, this perception that he was lazy or that he really wasn't into it anymore. He was just happy to enjoy retirement. No, this was a guy who was still deeply concerned about the state of the country, still following the issues, still kind of a news junkie, and has every bit as sharp as he ever was. He will be very much missed. And I think that he was a man of great wisdom and wit and goodwill. And, you know, boy, we need as much of that in our politics as we can get these days.
Amen. Again, condolences to his family, and an appropriate way to end the podcast today. Jim, good to be with you as always. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.